Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at League of Education Voters. In this podcast, we interview policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create a brighter future for every Washington student. Amy Campbell is the 2020 Washington State Teacher of the Year. After earning her master's in teaching, Amy realized her deep passion for supporting students with unique learning needs and returned to school for an endorsement in special education. She has been teaching at Helen Baller Elementary School in Camas for 12 years. In her position as a teacher of students with significant learning challenges, she collaborates with staff, parents, and community to develop individualized plans that focus on each student's unique skills, abilities, and interests to help them find their place among their peers in the school community. Amy does not live in a world of deficits. She lives and teaches a world of possibilities, potential, and opportunities. In her position as a liaison and advocate, she models her belief that all children are not yours, not mine, but ours. Amy, congratulations on being named 2020 Teacher of the Year.
Thank you so much. It's a crazy honor.
I can imagine. So you really focus on the entire experience of children who need special education services. Mm-hmm. And one of those things that isn't talked about much is the idea of transitions. How do we get from one point to another? How do we get from early learning to K-12? How do we get from K-12 to middle school and beyond? So what would you say is the best way to handle transitions for students who need special education services?
This is a great question, because I think one of the things that I have realized as I've been working directly with students who require special services is that I am serving a very specific age range. They're third to fifth graders. If I focus my attention just on their needs in that moment, we can do a lot of good. But if I'm able to take a broader perspective with my whole IEP team, including stakeholders in the community and parents, of the longer journey from beginning, where we started, the experiences those parents have, and helping them share their story to where they want their students to go, that we can achieve greater outcomes for students. I can see students moving in a direction by the end of their 3 years with me. I have a good starting point and a good end. So the transitions, what I see is we need to start out with a really strong early childhood setting. Mm-hmm. And in Camas, we have a lot of inclusive programming. What I see the benefit of that programming as parents of typically developing students and students who require specially designed instruction are getting their footing in a community that's ready to provide inclusive services. They're seeing their place, they're seeing their potential, and they're seeing learning happening together. And then some of those early transitions are so critical. We've helped develop some success, some skill. We've seen what services can look like. And now we're going to pass the torch to the next teacher, and oftentimes I'm that next teacher. We need to have strong communication between teams, and we need to continue to honor parent voice, help parents understand that it's very mysterious moving up into the elementary school level. If you have typically developing children, there are a lot of unknowns. You may not know which questions to ask. You may not even know what your child needs to be successful. But parents who have students who experience disabilities, they have even more questions. And they have oftentimes some baggage, some worry, and other emotional things they're working through. So that first transition, handoff from a positive early childhood setting, and hopefully everyone's had that, to the team handing off, here is a family, take care of them. Here is what they've had that's good. Here's what they're overcoming. Here's what the student needs to be successful. Here's what they're good at. Mm. Sharing those stories and passing the torch, that's great for me. If I can accept that challenge and be welcoming and build relationship with the family, welcome them into our team at Helen Baller, then what I find is I get forward steps towards the next transition, which is I get relationship with families, and they will tell me what they see for their children. And that is winning, because oftentimes parents who have children who have significant disabilities, they may have stories in their heart of where they want their children to go, that they don't know if this is possible, they don't know how it will be accepted. And so when we get to this transition where they're served with me and they can share with trust, I want my child to go to college. I want positive post-secondary outcomes. I see that he'll have success serving in wherever a parent has seen their child experience success. That guides what I'm able to do with my team for that student. We can craft goals and experience to move in that direction, which makes the next few transitions even more smooth. Because when I hand to the middle school teacher, I can pass my family, my student, to the next team, and we can again share the story, share the experiences, the trials, the successes, and they can continue co-writing that narrative with the family of where the student is going, carry the torch. So I think that there is no prescription for the correct transition, mm-hmm. but I think communication is key, relationship is key, and really honoring family input and really honoring investigating student potential and ability rather than deficit or need.
Do you currently have meetings with middle school teachers about your students that you have? Is that something that either you've done or is that something you'd like to do? And if you did do that, what could it look like?
Oh, man. Our middle school teacher, my colleague who does what I do at the middle school, he's like my work boyfriend. Okay, I don't know if you're allowed to say
yeah,
that.
You can.
But we actually hired him relatively recently. I was on the interview committee, and his personal philosophy was very similar to mine. I don't know if this is all stuff you can share, but he also sees that the inclusive opportunity, finding access, celebrating student success, accomplishment, just as an asset. And so what does collaboration look like? It can sometimes look like text messages at 10 p.m.
Wow.
As you're really trying to investigate what has worked for you before. When we were transitioning, I had 3 fifth graders last year. And it was even me going into his classroom and having conversations about what is it going to look like for these very unique learners to feel successful. And a lot of dialoguing between him, the parents of these students, and me, in a formal setting where we can talk about what's worked, what are their fears, what are their ambitions, how have I supported, how can he carry that torch? So a lot of collaboration. What does it look like? Anything it needs to look like for that kid. I'm really fortunate. The middle school's right next door. Part of their community, as I'm always talking about, building community for our students, that's me reaching out into the community and bringing them into my classroom, into our school, into our programs, reaching out to them. Building the community for the fifth graders I moved on meant keeping Helen Baller for them. They come back into our school and back into this setting. I got nominated. Who were the first people to come shake my hand? My old students.
Whoa.
Came back into the school. And I think this is part of their community. And we shouldn't be shutting down pieces of community that we've built. We're broadening a network. What does collaboration and transition look like for us? It's as many things as it can be. And I have students who were in my classroom the first year I taught. One student in particular, here's an anecdote, you can leave it or not. And he graduated from high school last year. He has had services in Camas this whole time. And now one of the desired outcomes for him is that he would be able to work in an office setting. And he experiences autism and he needs additional support to be successful, but we're building his independence in the school district by allowing him opportunity to work on office jobs in settings where he's previously had success. Mm-hmm. So he comes back to Helen Baller and he works in our library and in our office, building his job skills as part of our community. So we're building his skills and I'm collaborating and cheerleading for him even 10 years later as he's preparing for post-secondary outcomes. So transition doesn't have to mean pass and stop even. You're invested.
So let's talk about inclusion here, because inclusion is something that you do really well. A lot of people, including myself, don't know what's possible in the realm of inclusion.
Right.
How would you describe an ideal situation when it comes to inclusion?
So you said you don't even know what's possible in the realms of inclusion. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't even know what's possible in the realm of inclusion. I think a huge piece of my own personal growth and development is continuing to investigate what is a really high quality inclusive experience for individual students. Each student is so unique. They bring something different, different assets, different skills, different interests. Really good inclusion can look different for different people. And my students who I serve, there's not a one-size-fits-all model. Everybody's experiencing inclusion at a different rate, if you're going to give it a number. I have students who are profoundly disabled, who are nonverbal, who are in wheelchairs, but they are still included up to 50% of the day because we're able to find really good fits for them, places where they feel successful contributing. I think, how do I judge good inclusive experience? I think when a student goes into the room and you can see them feeling like part of the community, it isn't just in the room, they're with the room, they're with their friends. Good inclusion is different for each student, and I think that's what has shown a line on what I do, is I find a lot of unique opportunity, and that could be all my students go to specialists, but I have students who participate in the broader community doing package delivery. I have students who work with the school facility dog, who's not my dog, but created in relationships, and parents had post-secondary outcomes that involved potentially working with animals. Mm. And so we were able to collaborate and develop a program where he was able to go into another classroom, work with the therapy dog, and then take the therapy dog out other places in the school. So good inclusion isn't one size fits all. I don't even know all the good inclusive experiences that are on the horizon for my students. I think as we investigate inclusion from the systems level, we need to address the fact that it is a priority. Students need to be served with their typically developing peers. They are developing their sense of self and who they are and where they belong in this world. And I want them to understand that there is a place for them in the learning community as a contributing member, that they're a person of worth. And I think that it works for the typically developing students too. They need to see that all students have value and can contribute in their own ways. When I start to see relationships form between disabled children and typically developing children, my paraprofessionals or myself could be in the room facilitating good inclusion, the better that inclusion is working. The longer we've had the programs going, the more we step back and the more the programs and systems sustain themselves. Good inclusion looks like typically developing peers helping other students achieve success. And I think they're developing empathy, they're developing their ability to see other opportunity. Sometimes I'm an amazing educator who comes up with all kinds of inclusive opportunities. And even in that, I will go into a PE class. There will be typically developing peers coming up with more exciting, interesting, or appropriate inclusive opportunities than even I could come up with. They're coming up with ways to help students play hockey. He's in a wheelchair, why don't we do this? Or we could try this. He's very good at that. And I think when I hear students generating the ideas, I think this is the community I'm looking forward to living in the future. This is winning at inclusion at Helen Battler. Wow. There is no right answer. Inclusion is friends in the learning community. It's everyone learning together, and it's so exciting when it's happening.
We're all successful!
Yeah, exactly. Do you have to do a lot of facilitating for typically developing students to appreciate the strengths that disabled students have? What does that look like?
Okay, I've been doing this for 12 years, and I used to say when I first started that, so I was getting my footing with inclusion and creating experiences and making sure that we were with our typically developing peers. I would say to my staff members, and I would think as myself, like, I'm modeling these great experiences. A lot of these kids have grown up with having these inclusive experiences. And so this is natural. Students are absorbing it. They are seeing it. We're modeling it. But what I found over the past few years is that teaching works. And I need to be explicit. And so one of the things I've started doing is going into general education classrooms and teaching about inclusion or about disabilities. Because some of the barriers to really good inclusive experience for teachers, community members, and other students is fear of the unknown. I don't want to do something wrong. I don't want to hurt someone. I don't understand. Oftentimes even fear of talking about disabilities. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to react. It can be stifling. Yeah. the lessons I come up with are my own, mm-hmm. but kind of tailored to the need of an individual classroom. I go in, and usually the teachers stay too while I'm teaching. I think it's good for everyone to experience mm-hmm. the lessons on how to be inclusive. What I found is kids ask great questions. Mm-hmm. And when you start to be able to answer their questions and validate, I have questions too. This is just so normal. And it's okay. Then they get more comfortable, and the inclusion is so much better. Mm-hmm. Another thing I do to facilitate inclusion is I do a reverse inclusion model, mm-hmm. where inclusion is thought of just the children who require specially designed instruction leaving the special education classroom and coming into the general education classroom. The way we work at Helen Ballard, which is just very fortunate, is my students are on their general education rosters. I don't even have an attendance sheet. Wow. I cannot take attendance. And they go there first. Every student in the school goes to their general education classroom first, and they check in. And then if they need to come get specially designed instruction, they can come back to my room. But I don't want my room to be separate from the school community. And so a piece of that is bringing in their typically developing peers from their general education classroom into my classroom. We're going to demystify what's happening in here, and I'm going to welcome you into the community, so our room is just part of the whole school learning community. Mm-hmm. And so that's been exciting too. As children get more comfortable, I hear a lot of, oh, they're learning too. It looks like this. They're learning how to use the communication devices. They're learning how to scaffold their learning. They're learning how to be little teachers, and they're seeing what I'm doing. I said, I keep growing what inclusion can be and how I can be a leader. I had a teacher say to me the other day, I had a student come back and she had such a great time. And she said she understood so much better what this kid was experiencing and how to include him. And she said, I think I need to go see what you're doing. And I realized, oh my gosh, I've missed a piece. I can teach your class. You can come into my class. We can make this happen. How do I bring teachers into my classrooms too? So it's a big answer. What do I do to facilitate inclusion? As many things as I can. Hmm. And whatever it takes for each person.
I'm curious about one other thing too. You mentioned earlier about typically developing students being with students who need special education services. So if you have a student that is typically developing and you have a student who requires special education services or has mm-hmm. disabilities, when they're together, is there a power dynamic between the typically developing student and the disabled student?
I'm sure that can happen. I think what I see more frequently, I think I see fear more mm-hmm. than I see power struggle. That is almost more stifling. I think mm-hmm. I can do a lot of educating about other people's experiences, and children are very responsive to the idea of being empathetic. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of good social emotional learning, but one thing that is harder, I think, to overcome is fear. Yeah. And when I get students who would prefer not to participate, they will actively say, I don't want to be his partner, or I don't want to be his book buddy. And I think that is sad because I want them to feel comfortable being yeah. inclusive. I want them to feel successful mm-hmm. as a co-student in a classroom. So I think that's where I spend a lot of my energy, is the relationship sometimes is their experiences not feeling superior, but their experiences mm-hmm. feeling like they don't know what to do, is mm-hmm. how I assume these reactions, these interactions happen. From an educational standpoint, I tend to have a knee-jerk reaction and think, well, we will solve this problem right now. You will see the glory, and we will make you partners, and we will help this happen. But I think if you step back and really take a bigger picture perspective, I can ask, what experiences has the student had or not had mm-hmm. that leads them to be fearful? And how impactful if we can change their experience, because that will change their empathy and experience for the rest of their life.
Yeah, and I'm curious about experience. You've had experiences going through the educational system. Mm-hmm. What would you say for yourself worked well as you were going on your educational journey, and what didn't work so well?
Oh, man. This is a little harder. So I have a sister. Uh-huh. My sister and I grew up in a household with two educators. Uh-huh. It was amazing. And yeah. we had a lot of access. We had a lot of opportunity. We had role models. They were reading and they were teaching. And so I think I came into teaching kind of primed to be a teacher.
Yeah.
But one thing that was different about my educational experience and my sister's, I don't know if it was bad, but it was different, and I noticed the difference, is that when I went to school, I went to my neighborhood school, and I had a speech impediment growing up, and I remember going to get speech services, and I don't have a negative feeling about it, but I remember leaving, and I got title services in math and reading. I remember leaving the classroom and going away to get services, and I remember vaguely the activities we did. I do remember connecting with volunteers who would come in and read with me and do math with me, but I don't remember strongly connecting with the materials or the content. I just know I went, and however many years later it is, I have a recollection of leaving the room. And that's a memory that stands out. My sister had a different experience. She, 20 some odd years ago when we went to school, took an IQ test, and they said to her, "You're gifted enough that we're going to send you to a different elementary school, and if your parents can afford to drive you there," which my parents fortunately could, "you will go to this other school program." So I didn't think anything about it, but I remember my mom would pick me up from school and we would go to my sister's school, and she would come out and she had some of the coolest homework assignments. She was doing engineering type things and science experiments, and I was so lucky because my parents would never let Molly do her homework without me, and I would get to play with the ideas, the concepts. A lot of the activities were take it apart and put it back together. Oh. What do you think's going to happen next? And I remember being fascinated by the work that she was doing in a challenge program and really being interested in that, but not having an educational experience where I had accessed anything like that. Like, that was not my experience. And so coming out of that, I graduated from high school. I have an undergraduate degree in psychology, which I love. Anything to do with humans and thinking, that's my jam. And then I do have a graduate degree in teaching with this special education endorsement, so I feel like I have a good education. My sister graduated from high school, and she has a graduate degree in chemistry. We are very different personalities. Thanksgiving is like a crazy time in our house because we're just very different. But we like to compare the differences between how strange that we went to different schools and we saw different things and we experienced different things. And I think as a teacher, the seed that's planted in my mind is making sure that every child gets access to that curriculum that's going to be intriguing to them, that's going to be magical to them, that's going to catch their attention and sustain them. Because I don't know that anything I was experiencing, I don't remember it. I remember some of that content she had, and I think that's so critical. As a special education teacher, I want to make sure that no matter what the level, that we're finding these access points where my kids can go in, and when they're digging in dirt with bugs and science, we're going to be there digging in dirt with bugs and science, because that's enriching, exciting, and intriguing, and inspiring. I don't want any of my kids to walk away at the end of the day and not have had some of these rich, cool experiences.
What is the age difference between you and your sister? Were you twins?
No. No. My sister is 2 years younger than I am. She's very brilliant, so.
Okay. I'm just curious, because if you were twins, that just would have been wild. But still, 2 years.
No, 2 years different. Boy, I didn't always want to do her homework. Let me tell you that much.
Yeah, I'll bet.
There was a point where that finally just shifted, and I was like, boy, you take your trigonometry somewhere else. No.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, here at League of Education Voters, of course, we are all about relevant, engaging learning to meet children where they are, so that they will stick with it and say, okay, here's how this lines up to a pathway so that I can get to the career that I want to be on, because I am excited about that. So that leads me to my big question, which is, if you were in charge of our education system here in Washington State, and you could do anything you want to make it the best education system in the world, what would you do with no restrictions?
I don't know how people answer this question. I thought about it a lot. I'm going to give you one of those meandering politician answers, which is, first of all, there is no right answer. In the state of Washington, boy, it's got to be hard to be making singular decisions that are going to serve every population in the state, because Camas is so different than Seattle, is so different than Yakima and Spokane. And, oh my goodness, so really big systems decisions. I'm glad that some of the decision making happens at the local level, because each district is so different. But with that in mind, we do need to keep looking at change. We need to keep investigating what's happening across all systems, because we need to keep investigating what we're doing, because the population in the state, even as diverse as it is all over the state, is also continuing to change. And the way we want to serve students and identify needs is changing. 12 years ago when I started teaching, I didn't know what I know now, and I hope to know so much more in 12 years that will make me think other things, our priorities are important, and hopefully systems have changed that we're looking at new problems of practice. But if I was going to change one thing right now, it is critical to start to get educational opportunities, professional development, and experiences for general education teachers on how to use universal design, how to use accommodations and modifications in their classrooms to see and serve a diverse population. Because right now, my principal is actually the one who says, not yours, not mine, but ours. And it warms my heart, because it's very easy for, in the name of good intentions, to think that a student might be better served somewhere else. You are professional. I hear this. Oh, you're so good. You're amazing. I am. I have a lot of strategies, and I have a lot of accommodations, and I can modify things like crazy. But I am not the classroom teacher. That's your job. And I want to give you the skills, gen ed teachers, to be able to do what I know you want to do, which is help your children be successful. There is no gen ed teacher that doesn't look at their entire caseload and think and be up at night wondering, how do I connect with every one of these kids? How do I help every one of them be successful? And I think if we can start to give strategies and modifications, accommodations, whatever, empower teachers to know that specially designed instruction can happen in your classroom, with your curriculum, under your care and guidance, all students can be successful and achieve together. I think that's where we need to start in Washington. Give professional development out so everyone can feel like they can serve everyone.
Amen.
That's all I can think.
Absolutely.
It sounds easy. It's a huge call to action. I think the state is where we need to be right now. There's funding coming to train teachers, and I think that's exciting. I know teachers are ready.
Amy Campbell is the 2020 Washington State Teacher of the Year. Amy, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening. To learn more about League of Education Voters or to support our work, please visit educationvoters.org.